people maybe over-engineer their products when they don't really need to. And especially if they don't have access to a tool that lets them maybe experiment with different values of roughness, mm-hmm. for example, then same thing. They get to a situation where they put too much margin or more margin than they need, let's say.
Exactly. So margin is maybe costly, maybe not. Some margins can be achieved with very few iteration in the design without additional expenses.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. I'm your host, Zach Peterson. Today, we're talking with Yuri Shlepnev, president and founder of Symbirion. If you've been paying attention to some of the news over the past couple of months, you have probably noticed that the newest version of Symbior was just recently released. I'm a big fan of this program. I know many other Altium users are big fans of this program, and so I'm very happy to have Yuri here to talk about it with us today. Yuri, thanks so much for coming back on the podcast.
Hi, Zakaria. Thank you for inviting me, and hello, everyone.
Yes, it's great to have you back here. As I mentioned in the intro, you know, Symbior is, I think, one of the best signal analysis or signal integrity tools for PCB designers. And when we were talking last time, I had mentioned that I think the thing that's great about it is it really eliminates a lot of the complexity for simulations, specifically for people who may not have a really technical background as far as electromagnetics and computational electromagnetics and things like that.
Yes, this is exactly right. And all our latest developments are essentially to make this technology accessible to not only signal integrity, seasoned signal integrity engineers, but also layout engineers. And the foundation for this was our fast decomposition electromagnetic analysis with proven accuracy, but that was still difficult to use for people not familiar with scattering parameters and electromagnetic in general. So, and a few years ago, when we started this development of compliance analyzer, SI compliance analyzer tool, and last time we discussed it, and that was about a little less than 2 years ago, and it was a milestone in there. So we proceeded and built even easier to use, more interactive version now with possibility of automation. And it still has all those accuracy and computation speed capabilities. And that's, I hope I'll show how it looks like now and what you can achieve with this.
Yeah, and before we jump into the demo, I think one thing that's important to note is one of the great things about it is that it cuts down the time to get an initial result before you go into like a full 3D simulation. So I see it as really useful for just evaluating your initial estimate of how you're going to route your transmission lines, design your stack up, and those kinds of things. And I think as long as you hit those metrics with that fast simulation, then you can go through, do more work on your board, and then start to qualify it in 3D. Would you say that's an appropriate approach?
Yes, that's yeah, that's correct. And you have to do as much as you can in advance, and this version technically has this. We implemented SI compliance analyzer capabilities for pre-layout, where you start experimenting with different stack-ups, design views, and so on. And it's probably easy to show how it looks like, but then it goes into layout. And from layout, you can get board before the manufacturing and run it again, get the data from manufacturer on materials, on adjustment during the manufacturing, run it again. And with this version, you can also if you do it like this and do the post layout multiple times, you can also check and compare the results with the previous iteration of the same board. So starting from layout, then you get into first iteration of this board, of the same board, and compare the results, and then hopefully you manufacture it, bring the measured data in and compare. So, and everything to make the whole process, so remove all uncertainties and make it more predictable. And that's what the software is about predictability, how to predict interconnect behavior rather than guess. Rather than tuning the measured data to simulations, as I see now very often when companies demonstrate analysis to measurement correlation, was just tuning the results to the measurements. But in Symbior, we trying to support this whole process that has some steps to ensure that you are closer to measurements. You cannot be always exactly right. Some things still can go wrong. So that's what we do. Yes.
So as we've been talking, you mentioned a couple times compliance analysis, and you also mentioned pre-layout compliance analysis. When I hear that, and I think when other folks hear that, they'll probably think that means we're evaluating an initial design against some standard, so DDR4 or PCIe 5 or something like this. And then pre-layout, would that be from a linear network?
Yes, it's a linear network. We don't have models for nonlinear drivers yet, for specifically for this PCIe 5, you need equalizers over there. But there are still metrics that do not require nonlinear models of drivers and receivers. So, technically, during the pre-layout, now you do exactly the same as in post-layout. So in Symbior, you load the compliance conditions, which are compliance metrics in form of bounce on return loss, on insertion loss, on skew, on delay, all those metrics that you can measure with your oscilloscope, VNA, or with other instruments. Technically it's very similar to what you do in the measurements when your board is already done. But when the board is already done, it's already post-mortem, and you cannot do not much. But in case of pre-layout and post-layout also, after you run those compliance validation, check those bounds, the outcome is pass-fail. Luckily, you pass the metrics, but sometimes you fail. And then you have to troubleshoot. What is the problem? What pinpoint the location of the problem? This is equally important in pre-layout as well as in post-layout. In pre-layout, you design all transitions. Well, what are interconnects? Waveguiding structures that must have some continuous impedance from start to end without interruptions by discontinuities, by different. And our ERC mode and compliance analyzer helps you to find all those locations, but that's preliminary. It's local analysis. Most of the parameters that validated or checked versus compliance metrics, they're coming from the whole network, the system. Insertion loss, return loss, different types of crosstalk, and So you check them, and then you have to see where the problem and fix it. In pre-layout, it's easier. You control all the discontinuity. You create models for discontinuities or get those models from vendors, connector vendors, cable vendors. And then you provide this information how to route this board to layout engineer. And possibly this is the same person, and we have more and more cases like this. So you get it into layout and create the geometry. And then you want to see if this geometry behaves exactly as in your pre-layout, and it satisfies those metrics. And that's why you run this post-layout and then few iterations probably, and you get it right. But then something like you have a stack up which is not with materials that are not available from manufacturer or something like this, and you have to repeat the whole thing again. This is maybe tedious process. And last time we discussed it, I wish it all was within a layout tool. So layout tool uses only the structures that comply with all the signal integrity requirements and comply with a particular standard, like PCIe 5, you design a bus for this or links. Why not do this from the beginning? So 2 years passed and there is nothing close to it in the industry. You see, that's just never happened.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to ask is why is that? Why has it taken so long to do that? Because
nobody does it.
Nobody does it?
You're going to be surprised, but according to my sources, none of the major companies, they may have deep kind of I don't remember those scan project in deep in the companies that develop such tools, but no, they have separate division. One is modeling, another one is routing, and they all must not talking to each other, and obviously that's different. Those are different products, different revenue streams, and imagine that no modeling anymore. And router does your interconnects as it is supposed to do, compliant with PCIe 5 immediately. No simulation required. Or simulation is done as necessary in background without your knowledge, but you don't have to design vias, you don't have to design footprints for the connectors, and that would be really a killer product. I have not heard about anyone doing it. So if people are in layout, their development, they are in layout development. If people are in simulation, modeling, they are doing modeling and simulation and try to get as much money for this as they can as an additional product, and confusing people what they need actually, 3DM for instance, or do the complete thing in 3DM, and I don't know, it's just nature of the industry now with big companies, and I wish
from a business standpoint, I mean, what you just mentioned, right, of course, it makes sense. But from a user experience standpoint, it makes absolutely no sense.
Yes.
And I think it's funny you bring this up that no one has done it, because sometimes you read a paper or something and somebody presents an S parameter spectrum and then they just kind of state casually, oh, yeah, this will comply with this standard. And I think one of the questions that would come up if somebody were new to all of this and they read that, they would say, well, how do you know that? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the metric that you're supposed to just know off the top of your head that this complies with, for example, PCIe 5?
Yeah, and what parameters of the models went into there, and what adjustment of the geometries from manufacturers went into there. If you put all those things in, it's still a difficult domain. So there is no easy way to... you have to design, in other words, if you have more uncertainties, you have to design with a big margin, considering all the losses, crosstalks, and so on. So, when I say I wish it was immediately compliant, that requires a lot of things. Like in Altium, they've got this part suppliers, right, into the system. So you know exactly what part goes in. There must be exactly the same thing, system to get the information from material manufacturers, PCB manufacturers, about all the process that they use to manufacture the particular PCB with all the roughness parameter models. Dielectric models, they are okay now. They usually specified quite well, very close, but conductor roughness is complete uncertainty. And that's very common question. Where do I get the conductor roughness model parameters? And most common models like Huray-Bracken or causal Huray, also this. Where to get the parameters for those models? And some people provide, it's a guess, guessing. And some people provide, okay, you get this RZ number, and on the base of RZ number, you can compute one parameter for Huray model, and the other parameters, roughness factor is going to be fixed to 8 or 9 or something. That's cannonball model, so-called. You fix the roughness factor parameter, and then you guess the surface roughness or nodule ball diameter from RZ, pure guessing, because of RZ is different on different surfaces, and the model itself is not relevant to pyramids or to cannonballs or anything like this. So you guess, and you're gonna be somewhere around like plus minus few dBs at some frequency, and some people say, well, this is better than nothing, but it may be maybe recipe for disaster because of its that's a margin, exactly margin, few dB plus minus is where you cross the boundary between pass and fail.
You know, I could see not having access to these parameters or data on these parameters creating a situation where maybe some products get a little over-engineered. So just put a large enough margin and we accept that, you know, copper is going to be rough. We don't know how rough, but as a result, people maybe over-engineer their products when they don't really need to. And especially if they don't have access to a tool that lets them maybe experiment with different values of roughness, mm-hmm. for example, then same thing. They get to a situation where they put too much margin or more margin than they need, let's say.
Exactly. So margin is maybe costly, maybe not. Some margins can be achieved with very few iteration in the design without additional expenses. Something like making layer thicker and traces wider, and you get a big margin. But if you do it in a package, like I saw a presentation from Intel at the last EPIPS conference, where they say, okay, we need 6 dB insertion loss in a package at 40 or 50 gigahertz. I don't know. You can look up. That's very difficult number for a package. So they use skip layers And they say this is that increases the cost of the package overall, because if you clean few layers above and below, one or two, and then those interconnects are becoming wider for the same impedance, and you get this 6 dB margin in a package for 200 gigabit per second signal. That's why it is reasonable to do those things. But for PCB, it may cost not much. Double layers and above, below, and your trace is wider, and your losses are much lower. And obviously, numerical experiment costs almost nothing, just your time and software, obviously. But when you do it without the software and without some preliminary numbers, that's going to be costly experiment or respinning of your board, actually, even. So right now I see trend. Traces are getting narrow and narrow and narrow, like 3 mil, 4 mil. Dielectrics are thinner and thinner. And people then put those repeaters or retimers on the same board, because of they cannot get this those signals from one end of the board to another without huge losses. And instead of and that's much more costly, repeater delays and all this stuff. And I don't know. There is a lot of potential in achieving much better performance of interconnects, just working properly with the materials, with board manufacturers, and selecting. You mentioned this building your stack up that allow you to get the signal from one end of the board to another without huge losses, and without retimers. Nowadays, they in some standards like OEF, they do not really recommend retimers, and they say, well, re-engineering the electrical part may remove they call it linear drivers or something like this, where they technically get the optical signal without repeating the electrical signal. So same on the PCB. That's where it is important to select your material, do the analysis, and see all the possibilities, what you can achieve. Just selecting proper materials, proper stack up, and designing your discontinuities, vehicles. It's
So in terms of a workflow, right, on the mm-hmm. pre-layout end, you know, you're mentioning things like discontinuities, connector footprints, maybe the footprint on the or the ball out on the bottom side of a package, right? All mm-hmm. of this stuff are things that you could put into a linear network, basically link each block together with your mm-hmm. proposed transmission line routing style, whatever that may be, whether it's mm-hmm. strip line, coplanar, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you can go through, get all of the SI compliance metrics, and really check that, hey, this link is going to work for PCIe or 25 gigabit Ethernet or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I can show you how it looks like in Symbior now, this compliance yeah. analysis. And that's extremely easy. If I are we ready for this part? Or
yeah, yeah. Let's go ahead and take a look. Just go ahead yeah. and hit the share button, and you'll be able to share.
Share screen.
So I would encourage anyone who is listening on audio to head over to YouTube and watch this demo. Not only is it, of course, a good demo on a good piece of software, but we'll also learn how to interpret some of these compliance metrics just generally.
Okay, pre-layout, I basically prepare it. I'm not going to go through all the how in pre-layout you create your transmission line model in Symbior, or you create via model in Symbior 3D VM model. That's there are demo videos showing how to create 3D VM model, optimize it. This one is not optimized, so I can see it's pretty reflective up to 52 gigahertz.
So we're looking at some 3D structures initially of differential microstrip lines and differential via transition that are proposed for a new design.
Yes. And you design it in Symbior, and then you need to see if this is you can create a link out of those model, and the link is compliant. So I create a linear network with SI compliance analyzer under the control of SI compliance analyzer. And now I have this SI compliance analyzer over here in LNA mode, so-called. Analysis conditions here, 32 gigabit per second. We can load a particular standard like PCIe 4. And maybe we'll later switch to PCIe 5. So I loaded compliance condition for this PCIe 4, 16 gigabit per second, 30 picosecond rise time, and compliance conditions are in compliance conditions, obviously, section here of in compliance analyzer, in form of insertion loss, return loss, constraint, common to common return loss, I diagram, TDT, this is for delay, this is for delay between links, so there are no links here, skew and TDR. So, but I don't have circuit yet to simulate. So to create a circuit, I just drag and drop elements of a link, transmission line, then model for this multi-via. This is a 3D model of via. Then again, transmission line. So I'll transmission line include it's a differential. So all the ports here are differential. Then multi-V again. Then differential transmission line. I can put some lengths in there, but that's not necessary for this demonstration. I auto connected. Symbior auto connected. This is a whole differential link now. And there are IOs on both sides. Some parameters of IO can be further redefined in this IO configuration. So you can immediately see all the port names, numbers, type of and normalization right here. It's 85 ohm normalization.
I think this type of window would be really easy for someone who is not a simulation expert to use, because it really looks a lot like schematic capture. You're just dragging pieces in from a library.
Yes.
I mean, you created the transmission line, you know, in the project, of course, but you're just dragging pieces in and connecting them together, and now you've defined your signal flow.
Yeah. Now, the only thing we can do now is run it and see the results practically immediately. And the results, you can see all those green boxes. You can arrange the graphs here, pin them down, return loss. So return loss is okay. Skew is zero pretty much, because of this is link without any bands and so on. TDR of this link. And you can pin those down, and they stay in the schematic. So next time you open it, you can see those things as well. And eye diagram, obviously. So it's a big open eye. So, what if we have some package or other models on both sides? So all we need is just add a model of a package, and I'm just let me just pick up this, for instance. So GC, RL, CG, model like this. So it's all parameters.
Now, when you say model for a package, you're referring to, of course, the pin and the ball out and maybe if there's bond wires internally, any of that stuff that makes up the actual package for the chip.
Exactly. You can build a breakout for BGA part, and then you need something for package. In the package, you can simulate the package, the whole thing, and bring this model here. Or you can use simple model as in many standards that include just L and C. And right here, I just show how it works. So you're wiring things here in this schematic and wire it on the other side. And simply rerun the analysis. So now all I need is just again, run button, or there is a pop-up menu in, and it's still okay, return loss, we missed the point. Oh, okay, that's, it's already open. This is a graph for return loss. It's hit a little bit violating this condition.
So that was the next thing I'm going to ask you, which is when you're looking at this, when you go through your simulation, you're looking at the S parameter spectrum that's produced, right? There's this black line that's overlaid a little bit in the software. That is the limit that you're trying to hit, either stay above if it's losses or stay below if it's reflection.
Yeah, like for return loss, you can see if you're familiar with PCIe standard, you can see that it's below minus 10 dB up to 1.25, then it below 8, then it below 6. So this is a metric. So you can enter it yourself, or we have some examples of how to do this in with together with SimViewer. So same for eye mask. You can see the eye mask. You can see the mask for common to common return loss, or you can see those directly on those graphs here after the simulation. So this is how you can obviously bring some models in form of, you mentioned touchstone models. I open touchstone directory with the touchstone models that right here you can see that I have a number of them. So I'll pick up some like model of a connector and bring it into this project one. And instead of package model on this side, I'll wire a connector model. This connector model that has four differential ports. And this port goes here, this port goes here. And all I do after this is run again, and I'll see that the data for the standard with the connector.
And so this is where you're really building something that actually starts to look like a proposed layout, because as you mentioned earlier, right, you could have connectors. As long as you have that simulation data available from another connector, you can incorporate that into one of these simulations graphically as you've done here. And then continue to run the compliance analysis.
Yes. And you can see this the package part, which is inductive, usually it's capacitive. So we add the capacitance here, like 0.2, 200 femtofarads, and then run the analysis again. Very simple. This is... and something is inductive. Oh, because of the big inductance, and right here, it's probably you need to reduce it.
0. Yeah, 1 nanohenry seems a bit high.
Yes. That's why you've got this spike, and but you immediately see it. You pinpoint it on TDR.
Sure.
So now TDR is capacitive, and everything is fine. So that's how. Well, if you want to redesign it and make transmission line coplanar instead of simple differential, I select differential, invert the layer, and SimViewer automatically select right here. I need 85 ohm actually for PCIe. Click to calculate. That's it. This is 85 ohm transmission line, coplanar. And run the analysis. And this is my coplanar line now. And instead of like this section here, which is simple microstrip, I bring this coplanar waveguide section in the middle.
Yeah, so you're really experimenting with a lot of different routing options in this tool.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You're experimenting with different routing options and how it affects the compliance metrics. So, and it will recompute and put those big graphs. And now you can see 85 ohm section in the middle. And so if you want to see the bigger graphs, there is a compliance browser right here, new tool. You just hit collect and see all those measurements. Let's take a look at TDR. And right here, those graphs are more dynamic. So the other graphs are going to be dynamic as well. But for some reason...
Yeah, now you can overlay your cursor. You can really inspect
specific
points.
Yeah, overlay
your
cursor, yes, and see how it goes. And you can check multiple curves here, but right here we have just one eye diagram.
What's really nice about this is that in your compliance browser, right, you're looking through all of the different simulation results kind of one by one, but mm-hmm. you have a really nice pass-fail state entry right there in that table. There's no guessing, right? Someone who may not be familiar with all of the compliance conditions, it just says right there, did it pass or did it fail? They can move on to the next one.
Yeah, let's just see another example. I bring the S16P file and see if this is compliant with PCIe 4. And I just go again, close this browser and open Compliance Analyzer and create a new compliance analysis, bring this PCB links in here, auto-connect just without anything. And this is... this is for it copied the compliance metrics from the previous linear network analysis, and we'll see if this is compliant. And we can see for this model, we can see crosstalk parameters, and like this. So all this are compliant here. You can see all those metrics in. Either one by one or in compliance browser, you can collect all of them, and now we can see, for instance, from LNA2, you can see one of the links has resonance somewhere, and all other are very well aligned. So TDR, compare TDR very quickly. So no need to create the graphs and then drag and drop. Everything is collected almost immediately here.
Now, so, quick question, right?
Yeah.
This second network that you've just done, this other network is basically like a section of a PCB. So rather than drawing out each of the transmission lines, you already had a model for a PCB with no components on it. There are some transmission lines on it. Now you could start to add in the ports as you've done here, or you could add in connectors, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can add in connectors. So I, again, open Touchstone Analyzer, get a connector model, which is 16P model, and bring it into Project 1, get project this, and wire it with a connector. And again, I can put it use auto connect, it will reconnect and the wire this connector, preserving the link connectivity. Each I/O has some link parameter assigned to. So this is link one, this is link one as well. And then link two, three, and four.
So what we're looking at here now, right, you have a set of ports that you've defined on the PCB, right? We don't really care how they get there, but there's a port on the PCB. Then the other end of the PCB connects to a connector.
Connector,
and then you're looking at the output of the connector.
Mm-hmm. Output of the connector, we'll see this side, which probably BGA side, this side is connector side, and then you can continue and wire those things. And that's right here, we can see some failed condition, common to common return loss fail. So, but at this point, we can also experiment with other things. So, for instance, crosstalk is not specified in this standard, but what is a crosstalk? And for crosstalk, all those metrics here, it's just under one click of a mouse to add. For instance, we want to take a look at power sum crosstalk, and we want to look at single crosstalk from pulse response and put some limit on the crosstalk from pulse response, like simple 4 millivolt, let's say. And then just run the analysis. So now we'll see the crosstalk and the whole thing, how it looks like. So it takes a little longer, but still within probably less than a minute. It computes different types of time domain. Pulse crosstalk. Right here, we can see that there is a fair amount of crosstalk in those links. 29, and this is probably in the connector. And you can see power sum crosstalk, which is high. So if we want to put some limit on power sum crosstalk, simple, below 30 dB, again, run the analysis. Right now, it reruns all the analysis, but in the future, we'll probably recompute only the things we need to recompute. So, all this is very consistent. You can see now a lot of red boxes here, and red boxes are metrics that didn't pass, so a lot of crosstalk. And in compliance browser, we can collect only failed metrics. And now we'll have failed metrics. This is common to common return loss, which is violated over here. Power sum crosstalk violated badly. And crosstalk at different locations. You can see all those locations where it is. So both connector and PCB had some crosstalk issues. But I started with pre-layout, but let me show you how the post-layout looks like. I will just import Allegra board from OCP, Open Computing Project, and there is a board connector and slot riser over here. So the process for post layout look almost exactly as we saw it in pre-layout. The only difference, you don't have to create the models, you just need to select links for the analysis. So right here, let me just make it larger. We can switch to 3D view. And this is, again, everything is live here. And select PCIe.
So what we're looking at on screen now, we can literally see all of the different traces overlaid on each other. And now you're searching through the list of nets in this design just to select the PCIe links.
Yeah, I select four PCIe links. I can run, obviously, ERC analysis and see how it looks like and adjust proximity to right here, I need to get a larger zone around the traces to capture the crosstalk. So there are a lot of problems, and you can see it runs almost 500 cross different cross sections here. And
yeah, I think as we've been talking just in this like couple minute period, you've run what would be the equivalent of like 1,000 simulations all in one window. Whereas with exactly. another application that is not PCB specific, you would probably have to program in each one of those simulations, and it would, I mean, it's an intractable problem.
Yes, that's right now for PCIe, you can see this, the whole thing is red.
Yeah.
Because of it's not 45 ohm. So essentially, to make it 45, you need to adjust material properties. For instance, right here, those are not on the surface, but second layer from bottom, FR4, 3, 4, 3, 365, 385. So, like, if you put dielectric constant to, we need actually smaller. Yeah, we need smaller, then we need larger dielectric constant, 4.2, for instance, 4.2. So select different dielectric and then run the analysis again. First in ERC mode, just to make sure that impedances are, okay, where are we moving? 47. And let me one more time.
See, now with this process, you can iterate through materials before you even do any of SI stuff. It's just qualify the stack up in an existing design.
Yeah. There is other option is to make layer thinner. And
sure.
Right here. Yeah, we need actually lower. Yes. But it didn't help. So we can make traces larger, wider, and that may be helpful. So
one thing to note about the materials here is you're not picking from a library, right? You're actually custom designing everything with the materials, right? So you're picking the decay and the thickness, but it's up to the designer to then go back to their fabrication house, their material vendor, whoever, and ensure they can get a material that matches those two specs.
Yes. And now you can see that we needed to adjust traces, make them wider by 1 mil, and we also increase the dielectric constant, and now we have impedance very close to requirer. So that's what. And the next step is to.
And just for those listening on audio, we're not looking at like a 2D cross section here. We're actually looking at the actual traces in the layout as they would be manufactured.
Yes.
And making these adjustments. So that's what's really powerful about this view in this software.
Exactly. And so next step is to run FastSI analysis and see if those interconnects are compliant, just preliminary. This is preliminary analysis. And the last step would be to run it as full 3D analysis, and we'll run it in shortly. So now it creates all these models to make a sweep. So in ERC mode, it just analyze everything locally, but right here it unites everything into big create big circuits that you cannot really create manually. So those are all the unique cross sections everywhere, transmission lines and so on, and so everything passes here. But this is just boards. This is technically, you have to budget it to. This is not a complete link. So the complete link would be this board, then plus connector, and plus another board. And that's what we can do next. This is called enhanced post layout analysis, where you switch to LNA mode and create new linear network. Brings this extracted PCB traces, models for extracted traces into this layout here. Here you can see that this is connector side, this is BGA side.
So, so just for a moment. So what you've done is you've taken that PCB we were just looking at. You've created
a model for links, PCIe links.
Right.
And now I'll use a connector model on this right. side and auto connect it here, or I can wire it manually and run it with the connector model. That's basically enhanced post layout where you can cascade things, extracted link or multiple link parameters. Those are all based on S parameters and connectors and another link and so on. So that's, and again, you can immediately, you can see right here, it also checked the crosstalk and crosstalk didn't pass as well. So we can see that all those red boxes here. So mm-hmm. due to connector muscling, connector has a lot of crosstalk, this connector, particular one. So, and yeah, we can now go in into compliance browser, collect all the failed states, and create a nice report in HTML form to have it. And it goes and creates this report, put all those graphs into this report. And so you can now, when it is failed, you have to go back and adjust the structure either in layout or in your pre-layout or ask for another connector model, something like this. But the last type of analysis is 3DSI right here. And I'll just for speed, I select just one link here. And
so now, the analysis. Now we're back in the PCB layout, looking at it in 3D. Yeah. And then this mm-hmm. is the actual 3D simulation. So we could assume, let's say, we've already figured out that our initial design is going to work. We've initially mm-hmm. qualified it using the FAST simulator. Then we can go to a much more detailed simulation. And that's the 3D simulator you're doing now.
Yeah. 3D solver created all those discontinuity selectors and then used the same transmission line model between those selectors. Those selectors went into... you can see those 3D models, for instance, for vehicles. This is a parameterized model of vehicles that you can further optimize. Those are extracted from PCB. And they can be optimized in the vAnalyzer. So if you go into vAnalyzer, right here, those multi-via 2 and 3, they are here. So now SimViewer running. It's running it locally, but I can switch at any point, switch to distributed computing and use a couple of servers in here. And let me see. Yeah, as soon as it finishes one discontinuity, then another discontinuity will go, the analysis will go to a server.
So real quick, while progress. This is running,
yeah.
So going back to the front end here for a moment where we were at the pre-layout stage, mm-hmm. if you're running these simulations, and let's say you're just doing simulation, you're not the person who's actually doing the layout. How do you quickly summarize all of the required constraints for the design engineer? Is there a report that you output to then give them that?
A lot
of this, I think, comes down to, you know, qualify the stack up and then things like spacing, trace width, stuff like that.
In reports, there are no recommendations so far what to do.
Okay.
Obviously, with crosstalk, you have to increase spacing between the traces. And 3D electromagnetic analysis finished, and now we have a model for this particular link with higher accuracy, with the accuracy of the electromagnetic models. But it basically passed. So no recommendations so far, but right here you can additional metrics like TDR, they allow you to troubleshoot the source of those reflections. So on reflections in frequency domain, you don't know where they're coming from, right? So those are right here. But on TDR, you can clearly see that where they're coming from. And you can see from this end, there is this part closer to this. Those are inductive vias, big antiparts here. This is capacitive IC coupling capacitor mounting structure. Those are pins of the or parts of the BGA. And from the other end, we can explore it from the other end as well. So you can see that there is, we need to rotate it, and TDR looks like this. So there is a little bit of capacitance of the pads, connector pads, then inductive via hole. And you can see that inductive, the goal target impedance for PCIe 4 is 85, so but the vias are 100 ohm. So that was designed for previous iteration of PCIe, clearly, which was 100 ohm. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, we saw it 100 ohm, but we loaded PCIe 4, which is 85 ohm.
Yeah, so this really quickly lets you check that if you're going to take an existing design and update mm-hmm. it to, let's say, a component that has that newest interface, you can really quickly check that it's actually going to comply with the new standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. And so when we created the report, and let's just go Simur Demos pre-layout. Let me see Simur Demos pre-layout. Okay, yeah, this one. So it created a report, you mentioned that, but without the recommendation. So you can see mm-hmm. Those are failed conditions and which one failed. For instance, this one, this is in pre-layout. So you can see the IO names, they are all for pre-layout. But there are some for post-layout here. So this is that report includes everything. You can further narrow it down to something, see where the crosstalk coming from, and so on. But you still have to know what actually it is and how to fix it. So we, at this point, we do not provide clear guidance what can be done. In this case, via holes can be improved, redesigned. Cutouts below AC coupling capacitors done to reduce the capacitance, and very simple things that can improve it considerably, the holding. Right now, it's marginally pass. So typically, people design down to minus 50, minus 20 dB just to make sure that all the material variations and everything doesn't push this return loss higher than expected.
So you mentioned something important earlier, which I don't want to gloss over, which is, you know, looking at the TDR with the return mm-hmm. loss, right? Looking at the return loss doesn't really tell you where
yes.
excessive impedance might be or deficient impedance might mm-hmm. be. And I think if someone is only working on return loss, they're going to keep moving that port forward to try mm-hmm. and find exactly where the excessive impedance is. Whereas with the TDR, now you can just kind of measure across in length terms and then find out exactly where the impedance occurs.
Yes. Or you can run ERC again, ERC and see in colors. Oh, something is with recording probably. You can see the vias are inductive, red. Those capacitant pads are blue, and that's what we saw on TDR. So ERC mode basically helps you to figure out those are blue, those are red. You can see differential impedance of those vias is about 90 ohm, according to this quick, fast model. So again, ERC essentially it should be used in reverse, maybe. You first, the only thing you care, or a designer or PCB designer care, is whether they pass specifications or not. And the only thing they care about after this is if it passes, everything is fine. If it fails, how to fix it and what is the problem? So an ERC essentially at this point is also helpful. It's helpful as the first pass where you make sure that your VS are properly localized. Right here, they are localized up to 36 gigahertz, so good. No reference plane discontinuities. There are some discontinuities in reference plane here. So this board was not designed to run at even 16 gigabit per second. So it's probably 8 gigabit per second. You make sure that right here, Symbior shows that there are potential aggressors here, but didn't find that the compliance condition for crosstalk here is 20 millivolt. Let's just put it 2 millivolt and see if it finds that it should be substantial crosstalk here, probably. No, it doesn't show. Those impedance, who cares? Maybe it's not as important. Then you run those compliance metrics from a particular standard, and then you see does it matter or not. And you return back to ERC and see the actual villain here. What part of the structure violated or created this problem, reflection problem in this case?
Yeah, it's nice to be able to have that heat map that actually shows you where specifically in the design you're violating that electrical rule.
Yes, that's correct. And the other types of design in FastSI or 3DSI, they are from a black box. The measurements are derived from scattering parameters, and scattering parameters are black box. So only TDR gives you some glimpse into the interior of the structure. So that's what why we put TDR pretty much always into by default. Mm-hmm. Into the measured parameters. And so that's a type of troubleshooting pretty much the same as you have the final board and you want to measure. You can measure S parameters or you can measure TDR and see is it continuous, does it provide a continuous impedance from start to end or not. In this case, it doesn't.
Yeah, this is such a great demo. I mean, you've done probably, I've lost count, but probably thousands of simulations in the 20 or 30 minutes that we've been looking at this. I've lost track of time at the moment. But the number of simulations you've run is pretty staggering just with a few mouse clicks.
Yes, that's correct. And finally, we can run distributed computing analysis with 3D electromagnetic models for all four links.
Now you've selected all four of the PCI lanes.
All four, yes. And it even includes some crosstalk between vias here.
Oh, and you can even see the via-to-via crosstalk.
Probably. Let's see. No, in this case, on this side, you can see under BGA, the vias are very close, and they will be part of the via crosstalk.
I see.
The via to via crosstalk is the most difficult thing on PCB. You can easily account for crosstalk that happens between adjacent vias like this, or you can create even larger discontinuity selectors for all those vias and see the crosstalk. But there is fair amount of crosstalk. There will be fair amount of crosstalk between distant vias, because of when you go high and high in frequency. At 16 gigabit per second, that's probably nothing, but at 50, 100 gigabit per second, all those vias, they will become leaky. They'll leak energy like crazy, and this energy may be picked up by other links, by other vias. So I call it distant crosstalk. And on our website, there are two papers already or articles on crosstalk anatomy and on crosstalk quantification. And crosstalk quantification essentially covers all types of crosstalk, but examples there are only for crosstalk that happens in close structures, not for distant crosstalk.
This is interesting because you're talking about distant crosstalk, but you brought up the metric that you would need to use to figure out the frequency range where that would happen, which is localization frequency.
Yes.
And, yeah.
You saw localization frequency here is about 36 gigahertz. You don't see much energy leaking. In this case, probably 8% of the energy is leaking at 30 gigahertz. Right here, Symbio runs analysis on two servers. And that basically helps to get faster if you have more links or want to do the whole board analysis. So everything I showed here can be automated with this very simple scripting. So this is probably the best part for those who don't like clicking.
Yeah.
So.
You could set it up and you could have five different variants of a board, let's say, and just click the script and it runs
exactly
through all your different variants.
And scripts look extremely simple. I can show you one of those. This is the same board that we run, OCP, some parameters how to import this board, maybe additional stack up data with proper material models. Then you can run electrical rule checking and get a report on this. And then you can run fast analysis with crosstalk, for instance. This is without crosstalk. This is fast analysis with crosstalk to see crosstalk parameters. And this analysis of 3D, one link I showed you. And that's how it looks like. You just say, well, I need this, create this model, 3DSI type, what to include. And it also can use the preset right here, preset 16 gigabit per second. Preset for PCIe 4 to compute all compliance metrics automatically and move to compare the board results with the previous iteration of the same board. So if you keep it, it will use this as and will report which net is deviated from the previous version using S parameter similarity metrics which run from 0 to 100% and 100% perfectly identical and 0 not. So that's one of the very important part of Symbior that we developed during the last 2 years. So very popular among people who doesn't want. Last time we also discussed SDK, which automates the pre-layout. Again, part of the pre-layout analysis, now you can run the compliance metric. In scripting pre-layout is more tricky. It requires knowledge of Python or MATLAB, some other things. But scripting for post-layout is extremely easy.
Yeah, and I can see how that's going to keep a lot of people very efficient, especially if they have a lot of boards they need to try and put through a standardized analysis process to get them qualified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. And so we went through most of the discontinuities here, and it keeps running. And it usually takes like 10 minutes to complete this analysis. But that's analysis for the 3D electromagnetic models, automatically created.
Thank you for showing this demo, because this is extremely comprehensive. And so I'd, again, encourage anyone who's listening on audio, head over to YouTube and watch the demo. It's not just informative for learning about Symbior, but you also learn a lot about the process of SI analysis just generally for qualifying high-speed links. So I think this has been a great demo. One thing I wanted to ask you about before we wrap up is about recommendations. You had mentioned that it doesn't provide recommendations. I'm seeing nowadays some analysis tools out there that are really focused on doing some sort of analysis and then trying to provide the recommendation. And I'm seeing that recommendation more and more be powered by AI. Do you have any plans to take Symbior in this direction? I see you shaking your head. No.
AI is an extremely expensive thing, and even our enterprise customers say are not doing this. So that's I don't know. You probably can't teach AI, train neural network how to do this, but that's a lot of resources, and at the end of the day, you cannot rely on it. You see, exactly the same as you use those linguistic models, and sometimes it's right, sometimes it's completely wrong. I out of fun, I ask different signal integrity questions and for a while, and then I give up. I realize that sometimes it picks up things from right place, sometimes from wrong place, and everything is mixed up, and sometimes does even make sense. So what if you rely on this and manufacture a board? Well, there are some companies like Quilter, they use AI. You know this. They use AI to route the boards. So far, it's I don't know how far they progressed. Last demo video I saw, somebody tried to use it. It was kind of not really a powerful tool.
I would agree with you, and I think it's still too early to just
They'll probably train it and it will become better and better and better, like a brain, right? Some experts in the industry, they still deny that they use simulations, and they say we do our boards always right because of we know how. And they're trained by years of their experience and using the tools, actually. Solve so many problems and know exactly what to change. And when somebody asks me, I say, well, this is obvious. You need to change this and that and that. And there are just few parameters you can change over there to get it right, like impedance. Well, trace width, spacing, dielectric constant, vias, antiparts, via diameters, stitching vias, just increase or decrease or make few iterations and you're gonna have it right. So if AI will learn it, but that's expensive. It's not within our reach. So it's computational power. From time to time, we use Amazon servers. I didn't run it today. But that's expensive.
Yeah.
Even like if I want to run regression tests, that's expensive already. And it's just small number of cases that not even close to what you need to train AI.
Well, I think if you're an enterprise that's hiring a full-time signal integrity engineer, I think a properly trained signal integrity engineer on the right tool is going to be able to solve the same problems as AI, but for a lot less money, and probably with some additional insights that the AI just can't do.
But not even a signal integrity engineer. We have customers that are not trained signal integrity engineers nowadays. Just follow formal rules and no, as I mentioned, increase, decrease antipath, drill diameter or trace width and so on. So, and this formality of the metrics now make it extremely easy to make a decision, pass, fail. So that's another step to make Symbior one of the easiest to use tools on the market, electromagnetic tools on the market.
I would agree. I would agree. Well, at this point, we're out of time, unfortunately. But this has been extremely informative for me, and I hope extremely informative for all the viewers and listeners. I would encourage anyone that is interested, again, if you're listening on audio, head over to YouTube and watch the video. You'll learn a ton. And make sure to check out the show notes. You'll be able to find some links to learn about some of the topics that we've discussed in this episode. Yuri, thank you so much for joining us today.
Zakaria, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for good questions. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And I forgot to mention, you can go on our website, download Symbior, and get a free license for trial and see for yourself how it works.
To everyone that's been watching and listening, we've been talking with Yuri Shlepnev, president and founder of Symbiorion. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit the like button and hit the subscribe button. You'll be able to keep up with all of our tutorials and podcast episodes as they come out. And last but not least, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.